This is tape number one, recorded on May 14, 1979, in Seal Beach, Leisure World.
My name is Monica Berger, and I live here in Seal Beach, California. I'm 88 years old, and live by myself, and I wrote my life down as well as I could. The story of my life starts, news that got in a small town, and I was born to a parents that were very poor and hardworking. My mother had to work, my father had to work to keep the family going. And it was at a time in Germany when they came from being agriculture to and went to becoming industrial. So the land that my grandparents owned was all sold and for factories and things. And so all the people that lived there worked in these factories. They got to be world firms, like Bosch, McIndis, and those. And I went to school there, lived with my parents. I had a brother 2 years younger. I was christened Wilhelmina because of the Kaiser, whose name was Wilhelm. So in those days, every girl that was born and every boy either had to be named Wilhelm or Wilhelmina. And I stayed there through the 7 years of my schooling. When I was 9 years old, my mother died. And my mother had a brother in New York, in America. And he sent us gifts and beautiful calendars from the Singer sewing machine. And we grew up practically with two countries. One of them, the fantastic one, America, and the other one that we lived in. And so our childhood was really very much, very much taken with America. We believed all the storybooks about the cat family that washed on Monday and ironed on Tuesday and shopped on Wednesday. So when I did come to America, I expected everything to be like it was in those books. And when my mother died, I was 9 and my brother was 7, and after a year, my father married again. And this stepmother was very young, and we didn't get along at all, especially not her and I. And so I was at lots of trouble. And I would go to my grandmother with them, and she would tell her son in America about it, and he had married around those years, and they could use a girl my age with their growing children, so it was arranged that I could go to America. Well, when I first heard of it, I was beside myself with joy. What I was going to see all and do all, and oh boy, America loomed very large in my mind. And my brother started to say he wanted to go too. Well, they couldn't take two of us, so I got ready, and they got the things ready for me. My uncle sent the ticket, and I went with an old steamer called Blizzard. Burned up since right after that voyage, that steamer Blizzard burned, had a fire. It was a Hapag line steamer. It belonged to the Hamburg American line. So I sailed from Hamburg. Well, the day I went to America, the train to Hamburg went through our town, and all the children from my class, over 100, sat on the railing of the passage ran, waved goodbye, and it was quite a thing to go to America. But the train ride was a night and a day, and I got sick on the way because I had gotten so many goodies for farewell gifts, and I guess I ate them all at one time. And so I got pretty sick to my stomach, and I wanted to go home. The people that were responsible on the train said, "You can't go home. Your ticket is to Hamburg." So I stayed on there, and in Hamburg, some lady that I called Anne picked me up and took me to her house. And so I was there about 20 days till the steamer left from Cuxhaven. And another family, friends of hers, were on the same steamer, but they didn't want nothing to do with me. They had been already Americanized, and I didn't have quite the behavior and the actions that they would be proud of. So they put me on another table to eat. There were two kinds of ways, table toe, big table or small table. And I was on a large table, and opposite me was, I never forget, a red-headed farmer, quite chummy and full of freckles, and his wife and two boys about my own age. And those boys became the nightmare of my trip because they played all kinds of tricks on me. I didn't know what chewing gum was, for instance, and let me eat or made me eat the whole package. Just eat it, not chew it. And then they ran and told their mother that I had eaten all that chewing gum. Then she went after the nurse or stewardess, and they wanted to give me an enema. But I wouldn't let them. I was afraid that enema had some different meaning to me, and I was afraid of it, and I wouldn't let them do it. Can you ever stop it off? Can I ever stop it off?
But why do you want to stop it?
Because I want to get in my mind how I want to say this.
But you're doing fine.
I'm doing fine.
Yeah. Let's go back a little bit. What does your father do for a living?
My father had learned to be a clerk in a bank. He was smart, so they were going to educate him. But because he was such a rebel, and so he thought he had to cure all the ills of the world, and took it seriously, he became... Very young, he became, had no work. He was on the blacklist. They wouldn't take him because he was a rebel and he might arouse the other workers. And my mother had lots of worries for that reason, because there were just so many jobs for him to have. And pretty soon he had no work. So he played, he was a little... small-time musician. He played in a brass band, made a little money that way. And so he, after a while, bought a restaurant. A restaurant is somewhat different in Europe or in Germany than it is here. It's a place where people go for a half a day and eat and sit and chat and sing and do all those things. It's an amusement place at the same time. Well, my father was pretty good in business, and he was successful. And, of course, I had held a whole lot. I was afraid of plates when I saw them standing there, hundreds on hundreds of people using them, and that's all I did in my spare time was wash dishes. And so my father then was in this restaurant and with his wife and my brother when I left. I left from there. And
you said your mother worked. What did she do?
My mother, this after my father had a business, my mother was dead. His second wife never worked because she helped in that restaurant.
But she said cooking. Your mother worked.
My mother worked in that they made boxes. She used to bring us pretty papers home. They covered boxes, candy boxes for gifts. And that's where she worked. And then I didn't see her stay home. When my brother was a baby, I was 2 years old, so grandma helped. She's always working. Well, now this new mother helped in the restaurant. And but she was not the kind person that would succeed in a restaurant. She threw the people out when it got too late, and my father lost business year after year. It got less, and he finally gave it up, and he had made some money, and he went in the fur business, buying skins. That's a special trade they have over there. They buy rabbit skins and little deer skins and bring it to the people that make gloves. Kid gloves are all styled, and they make kid gloves from it. Well, I lost sight, and my grandmother would write to me, but I was all ear and all feeling for America. I wanted to see and hear everything. Well, on this ship, where they wanted to give me an enema, that was my biggest bad thing that happened to me, because we girls were of that age where we were curious where babies came from, and so we among ourselves thought it had something to do with that douche can, because it was hung in every bedroom in the land, and it was always covered up and hushed up. So we sensed there was something not right with that, something secret. And where babies came from and all about, that was secret anyhow. So I came to school after my mother was, the second mother was sick, and my father must have given her an enema or something. And I watched and watched, and I went to school the next day, and I said, now I know where babies come from. They pump it into the mama's tummy from that can. And then when it's time, they open the navel, and that's how the babies come out. And I was quite a hero knowing that. And they took it from me because I had a man that was a midwife. They thought I knew more than the rest. Well, when they wanted to give me an enema on a ship, I thought maybe I get a baby from it. And I wouldn't let them. I screamed and ran. Then the next day, the boys took me down in what they call the steerage of the ship. And there was a circus going to New York. But I think it was Barnum and Bailey. And they had a big elephant and a smaller one and then two little ones. They had lions, zebras. They were all in cages down there. And when we were down there, they left and closed the door that I couldn't open it anymore. And I was in with those animals the whole night. And they had first asked me to go up on the big elephant, and they shoved me up, and that was a big animal, and I didn't dare to come back down, so I stayed on that elephant, and I cried and I cried, and the elephant brought his trunk around, and I'm sure he wanted to help me to come down, only I didn't have the nerve. And so it got to be morning, and a man came that took care of them, fed them. And he heard me crying. He said, what in the world are you doing in here? And lifted me down and took me upstairs to the purser. And then they found out how it happened, that those boys locked me in down there. Of course, that mother and that father didn't do anything of it. They thought it was a joke. It wasn't to me. Well, all the new things that came to me on the ship, and the meals were so different. They didn't at all eat like we ate at home, soup or just chops or something. They had this long, big bill of fare. And even if it was written in Germany, for instance, Kaiser Wilhelm soup, there's a parsley potato soup. I didn't know what it was. So I got to order everything what that farmer ordered. And he would order the queerest things that I couldn't know just to see what I'd do with it. And he said opposite me, he said here, and I said him, his wife here, and the boys would laugh if I didn't know how to, you know, eat that stuff. And so one day came when they had a sign up that there was a ball that evening, a dance, and that everybody should get dressed up. Well, that morning I arrived in my ball dress. I had a party dress they had made for me, already dressed for the ball and for breakfast. And that's the morning I picked on the soft-boiled eggs. Every morning he had two soft-boiled eggs, but I didn't dare to open them the way he, because at home my mother would put them in a cup for us to eat. And he hit and cut that top off so smooth, and I watched every day, and just that morning I I tackled them, and they went right down all over my clothes. And so I had no party dress at all for that evening. And those kids, those boys laughed. And I rolled the dress up so scared, remembering the licking I would get at home. I rolled it up and hid it, washed it later on in New York and spoiled it all. The welfare group and ran into the white in Lytton. Isn't it? Well, anyway, that was one of the things. And then the animal. Then they gave me bananas to eat. There was always a pretty big plate of fruit on the table. See, my uncle had paid cap'n, and not steerage, cap'n price, so I had a pretty good cap'n all to myself and good food. But the food didn't seem like home, and I discovered that there were lots of kids if I climbed down once. Stairs, and they had little soup and bean soup, and it looked more like home. So I would take these huge napkins on my lap and put a banana and apple and whatever sweets there were in that napkin and tie the corners and go off to steerage and eat with them soup. And they were, I think at that time, they were Hungarians who came over here for work, or Italians or somebody like that, and lots of children. And then we would play marbles and things. So after I was in New York at my uncle's house for a while, everybody was scratching their heads and they all had lice that I brought to the trip. And my uncle said I could have saved my money and said, have you come steerage in the first place? Well, New York was something that just took my breath away, all those tall buildings and all you I got to see in New York. And as I said, it was Labor Day when we came, and I couldn't get that. I had one of these little books to look up words and learn words from it. And I couldn't get through my head why anybody would celebrate labor, how it worked. But then my uncle tried to explain it, and all I wanted to see first was the Singer Sewing Machine building. That was the highest building in those days, and it was 18 stories high. And they always said people would go up and down in a Fahrstuhl. That's an elevator in German, Fahrstuhl. So I walked around that building looking for that chair, thinking it would go up and down on the outside, and I would see people maybe get a ride up on it. And my uncle said, that's entirely different. That's not a chair like that. It's inside. Well, later on, they took me into the Singer Sewing Machine company, and I saw it all and how it worked. And they took me down to the battery to see the battery park and above all, when we landed, it was raining, and you could see the Statue of Liberty just through the drizzle. And it looked not very friendly. So my uncle took me down on a clear day, and he went over there with the boat, and he let me climb on the inside. Those days you could go in and look through the finger. Later on it was broken, and nobody could go up anymore. Well, that was about my first outing with the Statue of Liberty and all the things, and the elevator. We had to go home always on Third Avenue elevator. And I didn't know how to speak yet. My uncle went to work, and I got a nickel spending money every day that I could do with what I wanted. So I went exploring New York. And because I didn't know how to say where I lived, if I got lost, I always had a chalk in my pocket, and I would write it on the sidewalk for somebody so they could tell me which way to go. And one time I went, not in New York, uptown New York, spreads, there's the Harlem River, and here is the Bronx, and there is Harlem, and two kinds of different trains. And I didn't know that, and I landed in Harlem. When I saw I wasn't where I was supposed to be, I got out and went out down on the streets, and nobody knew where I lived, so I found a policeman finally and wrote this 365 East 168th Street. It was all numbers, all. on the sidewalk, and he went with me to the elevator and put me on the elevator back. And then I found home, and my uncle said that I should not go so far away from the house. Someday I'd get lost, and I never would find home. But, oh, I was so inquisitive and so nosy. I found out there was a wax museum down on 23rd Street somewhere, or 14th Street. I think for a week every day I went to that wax museum. There, that was at the time when the Flatiron building on 23rd Street was new and a very fine hotel was up there. That's where later the next year a murder happened there. The, Evelyn Espitor's husband murdered a lawyer by the name Harris or something like that. And they always put away the newspaper that I shouldn't see what was on the headlines. They didn't want me to know anything about that. And you know, you get so nosy that you find out. My uncle got a daily newspaper, an American and a German, so the German I could read. And oh, was I inquisitive about this, what had gone on and why he got murdered and so on. And pretty soon her, she was a beautiful woman, this Evelyn Espitor. Well, that's long before your time. Maybe you don't know any, this is historical, yeah. She was in that, down in that museum, and she was just so beautiful. And of course, many other notorious people were there. And a policeman stood up by the door, and he was standing there, and his, what do you call that, billy, that they used, a billy club, and that was always going back and forth, and I was afraid of him. I had always done something wrong, so I always had a bad conscience, and this one day, I stepped on the toe by not being careful enough, and this thing went fast, and I ran out and went home so fast, so afraid of that the policeman was after me. Oh, and many things like that happened. In the house where we lived in the Bronx, excuse me, that was a new building and beautiful. It had brass rails. There were two buildings alike, all of them four stories high, and we lived on the fourth floor of one of the buildings. And right from the bottom entrance, carpet went up all the stairs. It was even new in America then, those days. And, oh, I was so taken with that building. And downstairs lived a man, the janitor. And he would, we would put our garbage on the dumbwaiter, and he'd bring it down and empty it. And in the morning, he would send our rolls up. We had a name on the bell with a little bag on, the rolls went in. And, oh, it was quite the life. And you could talk to the neighbor through the dumbwaiter, and there were some Irish people living opposite my aunt and uncle, and she taught me quite a few words, and one morning I had learned how to say, can you lend me a half a dollar? And she said, sure, sure, and she went and got a half a dollar and wanted to give it to me, and then my aunt came, she doesn't want no money, so this Mrs. Gilly was her name. She said, it's the first time a greenhorn got me instead of that she fooled me up with her. Well, things like that. Sunday she would go. Bronx Park wasn't there yet then in the Bronx, but we had other nice parks and we went out. And in the morning, early in the morning, you could hear the chickens, the roosters crow, and the chickens, and once in a while I could even hear a cow moo. That's how countryside that upper New York was, that upper part was a farming land. And now when I went around the Manhattan Island several years ago with my grandchildren, it was so different. It had changed. So. And all of it impressed me. My aunt taught me how to go down to 4th Street in New York where the German bakeries were on Saturday morning and get fresh cake, fresh, you know, like prune cake or apple cake or whatever they baked, or all the way down for 5 cents. You could go down and you had to pay five back, but if I went to Coney Island and I didn't get out, I could I could walk over to the Brooklyn Bridge and even go way down to the beach off of 5 cents. And that impressed me. But then if I wasn't careful, I didn't have no nickel left for the nickel movie. How was it called?
Nickelodeon,
yes. Oh, that used to be fun to go in there. And you know, at first you saw nothing but maybe a rooster crow and move a little bit, and that was just great. And for years, you know, we watched those silent movies and never expected anything else. And I think of it now, how sophisticated. I sit in my own living room and watch the dramas and what have you, and big concerts and all that. Just marvelous, really. When you think how we have in one, not quite 100 years, how we have advanced technically on every field. How little those ball games started with the boys, the little games, and grew, it's an industry today. In fact, everything. Well, I had a great time, and because I did so many things to my poor aunt that I don't blame her. She couldn't stand me around anymore. She couldn't hardly leave her house if I didn't do something wrong. In Germany, one of the bad things you have as a child, you have to shine their shoes. A German wouldn't go out without shine shoes in the morning. And I, being the oldest, I had to do all that all the time, and you couldn't get... When the shoe was standing, you just couldn't get it hardly to shine. Well, here they had something in the bottle that made those high-cross, those black shoes, you had button shoes, you remember them? And all the shoes you could shine with this beautiful liquid stuff. So, and my aunt showed me how to shine the stove, a hearth-like stove, you know, a flat stove, where she cooked, and behind it was a round boiler that made the water hot. And the women's bride were those stoves. It had to be like a looking glass. So she went out shopping one day, and I thought, I don't know why they're so dumb. Why don't they use that shoe blackening? And I blackened the whole stove with all the shoe blackening there was, and she couldn't get that smell out of the house. She had to make supper, and it stunk like anything. My uncle came home, and he said, what in the world is this? Well, that's your niece. Look what she did today. Now, another time she went out and she had she washed every Monday and then had a lot of starch washed. And she had to go to the doctor with little Willie. And I thought, now I'm going to do something real nice for her. I'm going to iron all that wash. And we had 6 irons on that stove. And you watched how you put them down, the hottest one you took, and dried it and ironed with it. You know how those, you remember how those irons look?
I don't remember, but I've seen them.
Yeah, you've seen them. Well, not sprinkling the clothes and not making those irons hot enough, all the wash got rusty and dirty. Oh, she mad that day. But she never touched me, you see. Would have been good if she knocked my block off a little bit. I wouldn't have done it. But I wasn't being hit or anything that hurt. So I thought I was doing something good. She took that wash down and soaked it all in water and had to wash it all over again. And things like that. Oh, I wanted to learn how to sew on a sewing machine. Every chance I got, I went after the sewing machine and maybe took some cloth that I shouldn't have. And I got that sewing machine so bunched up with thread underneath that it wouldn't move anymore. And then I covered nicely up again. And next time she wanted to sew, it was a mess. She didn't know how to fix it. And all things like that. So she must have talked to my uncle and said he had to do something. So he had friends over in Staten Island, in Stapleton, and they were invited there, and they visited there, and they talked about me, and I suppose my aunt talked too, how she could hardly stand me with all that energy I had and always doing something. So they had a little boy, Charlie, 3 1/2. So they said, oh, send her over here. Send her over here. We can just use a girl like that, and she can take care of Charlie. Because they had a big butcher shop, a big one. There's 7 butcher working in the back, and somebody on the cash drawer, and a maid in the kitchen, the cook. It was a big place. And that was pretty nice. I was there about, oh, maybe 5 months or 6 months. And they paid me $6 a month. And my aunt and uncle insured me then already with the Prudential in case I would get sick or something would happen. And, you know, it was one of these policies that got the money back after 20 years. So it was right away saving. Well, why I tell that, because something awful happened to me to that raise. I got a raise to $7 after a while, and I wouldn't tell my aunt. I wanted to buy things that she didn't know. And on the way up from the elevator to my aunt's house, it's a little store, and they had beautiful kid gloves in the winter. Well, to me, kid gloves were just the highest sign of nobility. You would surely somebody if you had a pair of kid gloves. And there was a pair of black kid gloves that fitted me, and they cost 50 cents. And I bought those gloves out of that extra dollar, and I suppose I spent the other 50 cents. They knew every penny I had and what I made, so that's why I didn't tell that $1. Well, I had to sleep with the cook, and she was a Hungarian woman. And all of a sudden, around Christmas, close to Christmas, she started to say that somebody took $2 out of her purse or out of her drawer. I don't know anymore. And it got so that she accused me. And my aunt and uncle, my aunt especially, was only too glad that something real bad came up against me, because my uncle started saying, well, couldn't have anybody that steals around. I was going to be sent back to Germany. Oh, boy. I really and honestly got so serious that I was going to, there was a train going through Sydney. I was going to take my life. I was so, rather than go back to Germany. And I meant it. And finally, my uncle and aunt was called, and there was a big ado about it. And yes, and then they found out that I had gotten $7. And not six. And then when I said about the kid gloves, well, then my uncle thought by himself, well, if she had that dollar, yes, where did she get the money to buy kid gloves? And where did she get the money to buy that extra chalk that she had in her pocket? And then I didn't tell him I got a dollar more. I was scared to say that. But when my uncle found that out, he thought, well, she didn't have to take anybody's $2 if she had an extra dollar. And he doubted it somehow. And he said to me, they took me home then. Not that the people wouldn't keep me, but my uncle was insulted. And he took me home with him. And he said, you behave now. And then he talked to me one time and my aunt wasn't around. And he said, now, if you tell me the truth, you don't get punished. And I forgive you, I won't send you to Germany, but tell me if you took it. And I said, no, Uncle, I didn't. And I hadn't. And so he believed me, and I was allowed to stay, and that went away. That was something bad for me. And then a few months later, or sometime later, these people called my uncle, or they met somewhere, and they told him they had to let that cook go. She stole money from the butchers, and then they wanted to make up again. You know, they were sorry, but my uncle was in the friendship. Isn't that funny that he could not stand that even I, it wouldn't have been his fault had I taken it, couldn't stand that on his name, that one of his family would steal something. And the people, when we met, they had these, excuse me a minute, I gotta get a tissue.
Okay, let me turn this thing off.
Yeah. Well, then my aunt tried to find a place for me again where I could go and live with people. And they had a Dr. Kamenoff, and he had three children. He also lived in the Bronx. And my aunt had a little boy was sick, so she talked with the doctor. What a terrible load she has with me. And the doctor said, oh, we're looking for a young girl to go to the farm with my wife for the summer to Connecticut. And they had quite a large farm there with a vegetable garden and everything. And there's lots for her to do. And oh, was I happy to go with that little Irish grandma and the children and the doctor's wife. And he left one of the horses up with us. He had a stable and like a farm, and we had an apple orchard. And it was a nice place to be. The farmer lived 2 miles away down the road, and they showed me the first morning. And then after that, I went on the horse's back without a saddle, just held on his hair and got milk every morning. You know, those days, they had little steps in the front, just big enough to hop on the horse. Often I took a ride with the kids. That horse was so tame. Joe was the horse's name. But the farmer had a bull, and I was afraid to go on foot, and you never know when you'd meet up with so on the horse, it was all right. I could gallop away. Oh, that was a nice feature. And did it have huckleberries in Connecticut? We had some like a comb, coarse comb, and just combed them off. And we were on the field one day, I and all the kids and the little Ralphie had a red suit on and that bull came. Charging. And I was just horrified. And I knew enough to throw those kids behind higher bushes. And I went back there, and he came, and he looked, and I thought, Jesus, you're so afraid of such a dumb animal. He'll be right here, and he don't see you. But you can get awful scared with them. And one day we got too close to a skunk. Oh, a pretty skunk. And I didn't know what a skunk was. And it was outside of the farm, and it was very much underbrush and hard to walk. And that skunk between the three kids and I, he must have gotten confused with them. Anyhow, he turned around and gave me mine, and oh, they had to burn everything I wore, and I don't know how often they scrubbed me. I was only 14 or 14 and a half at that time. Yes, and the one main thing, I think that's why they took me mostly, I had to break the bread. There were no stores and nothing. For miles and miles, so once a week you had to bake bread. And I was telling my son the other day how simple it was. At home, baking day, when my grandmother baked, or my mother, that was almost a job, a whole day. They would bake for a week also, and they would have this big wooden mold on the floor. And they, oh, what a time to get that dough knitted. Needed, because it had to be worked through and raised and all. And here they had a galvanized pail that they put on this big farm table, a wooden table, and brought out the flour, and they had yeast, and they also had an old sourdough, a pot full, that they brought. They had from last year or I don't know when. And they showed me exactly how much there was scale, how much flour to weigh and how much salt to put in, and how much yeast and all, and then lukewarm water made that yeast go soft again. And I never forget, I had to make 17 turns. It was like a meat chopper, only much bigger. And then I covered that up, a big blanket, doubled, and had to wait so many hours. I did that at 10 o'clock and fixed the fire, not make the fire, but had it ready. And because at 2 o'clock, I had to get up again and give it 20 treats. And then light the fire. By 5 or 5:30, I could put those 8 loaves of bread in, 2 on top and 2 on the bottom. And that came out just perfect all the time. And you didn't have all that work they had in Germany. I wrote them a letter in Germany how dumb they are to work so hard over bread. I was making it so easy. Yeah. And one night, Grandma, Granny, they called her, must have had a headache, so she tied. She had her bedroom right next to the kitchen, and I was baking. She tied this scarf, a white cloth around her head, and she had her braid hanging down, and a candle in her hand, and in the other hand, a glass with tea. And I saw that, and I dropped the door and ran out and yelled, the ghost, I wouldn't go back in that house. So the kids and everybody was up. Well, I had never seen a human being that could carry their teeth in my life. And then she had this candle and this bread. I didn't know her. And I was just putting it in a can and dropped it on the floor and ran out. The candle, and she said, to me, "You're so smart." You know, in her Irish dialect, my uncle said, "You come back with an Irish accent in your English." But it's a nice place to stay, nice people, and I knew English. I mean, everyday English. I mean, you never ask anybody about numbers of bread or words like that. I learned that from the kids and from the people. They had nobody else to talk to. I had no other job but play with the children, get the milk and wash the dishes and make bread. And they could stay in bed then, you see, longer. So I was a year with them. They even let me stay with them in the Bronx. And 1 year. And then I had, that was all. My uncle was still alive. He wondered about how I spoke English when I came back. When my uncle died in 707, then they had, not relatives, but close friends, a school friend of my mother had started in the hotel business. She had a small hotel, and she cooked on Wall Street and got all these rich Wall Street people, and she got to be a real rich woman. She married after, married a butcher and bought a hotel and then a bigger hotel. And at that time, when I was there then, they owned the Consumers Park Brewery, and that's on the way to Brighton Beach. And that's the big hotel. On Sundays, they had 100 waiters. And I had it, and she could use me. She wanted me. She had other girls working there. But I had sort of, I had to make the change. And I had to be, I was like a daughter to her or somebody of the family that kept an eye open upstairs while they were all busy downstairs in the dining rooms. And they had a band playing and all that. And we had a garden. In Germany, you call it the Gartenwirtschaft, that the table and chairs out in the open on the trees, and they serve beer and coffee and whatever, and they had music there, you know, one of those kind of instruments. Well, and the shed for horses, people came in those little carriages, big wheels, and I used to be allowed to go along on a ride to Prospect Park, but my dad aunt had a horse and one of these, what did they call those wagons? Just two seats and a great big wheel. And all the ladies, they were ladies' horses, you see, for the women of the family. And she had one because she had to get out in the air. Well, anyhow, in that house I was when my uncle died. And they had a nephew of the husband. And he was maybe 4 or 5 years older than I am. And when my uncle died, what to do with me? They couldn't leave me, or didn't want to leave me all alone in America. So they put their heads together and wanted me and Danny to get married, that nephew and I. So they allowed us to go out to get acquainted downtown. And it was Moulin Rouge was playing. I'll never forget. That became a big movie later on, that this was a stage play. And it was over at 10 or 10:30, then we were allowed 15 minutes for a ice cream soda, which was right next to that Moulin Rouge theater. And then they figured out how much time when I could be home and when he could be home. Well, he didn't go to the hotel, but I did. He lived somewhere else with his sister. But he had other ideas. He said, "Never mind the ice cream cone," and took me into Central Park. And Central Park is a huge park, and you can get lost when you don't know your way. And he sat me down. Oh, I forgot to tell what my grandmother said when I went to America. She gave me a little testament and told me a prayer that I should say if I was in trouble. And then she said, "Don't ever, ever kiss a man. That's how you get a baby." And I believed that, and he started kissing me. So I got up and ran away. I was afraid and lost my way and got home so late. It must have been 11:30. You know, after 10 o'clock those days, you were a bad woman if you came home after 10. And this is my first time out, and I got it stolen. And my other aunt in the Bronx, no. And then I found out I don't want to marry him. I didn't like him. First of all, he was too fresh, and I didn't like him. It was all right to go out because it was a novelty, and it was something I was curious about. But no, then I told the maid, my aunt in the hotel had a maid that was in their own apartment and did the work, and I gave her the letter. I wrote the letter that I wasn't going to get married, and that was a little Tiffany diamond ring in it, and she was to give it to she was my confidant when I was gone, and she did, and I ran away to Guelph and to New Jersey.